Welcome to the lifestyle segment of Conscious Leaders. Leadership isn't just about what happens in the boardroom. It's about curiosity, understanding the way we live our lives. It's about how we take care of ourselves, how we manage our time, and how we create balance in our lives. This is the way we live, and it impacts the way we lead. So let's dive in and discover how we can make conscious lifestyle choices that's not only there to improve our lives, but also to enhance the way we show up as leaders. Hello, guys. How are you doing?
Well, good. And yourself?
Fantastic. I think let's go around the room, starting with Coogan, then Dylan and David, and just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Thank you for that comment. Thank you for the beautiful introduction. I think my name is Coogan Pillay. I'm 41, professional in the corporate world. I have two kids, wife, teenage kids. I love thought leadership. I love LinkedIn. I love understanding people's emotions and leadership kind of things. So yeah, that's the summary. Quick.
Thanks, Coogan. Carmen, thank you again for the invitation. It's really an honor to be here and to be able to share. My name is Dylan Price. I'm 32 years old, married, got a beautiful baby boy, 20 months old, maybe not a boy anymore, becoming a little toddler, but very cool. Similar to Coogan, I'm a professional in corporate from an insurance background. I live in George, love it down here in the Garden Route, very blessed to live down here. And similar also to Coogan, I enjoy engaging in thought leadership, and I actually love people. Ever since a little boy, I've loved to speak to people, understand people's backgrounds, cultures, and I just find a fascination in people. And probably that's why I ended up in marketing as well as a background, getting to understand consumers, and just absolutely excited to have this conversation with everyone here.
Well, thanks, Dylan. My name's David Joshua. So I work in leadership development with exciting companies, helping their teams move into high performance and psychological safety. With Henley Business School on high impact communication, how to use this sacred technology of the word so that we're impactful, influential, and ultimately speak to the highest good. And the bit of work that really excites me and maybe why I'm here today is helping successful executives learn to be rich on paper and rich on life. So many of us get material success and confuse it with fulfillment. And part of my gift is helping people rediscover meaning and purpose.
So I think in order to kick off this conversation, I'd like to actually mention what was said on this post. And then, Coogan, I'd like you to give a little bit of context and background why you decided to write this post. And then, Dylan, I'd also just love your input as to why you said what you said, and I'll read that out as well. So it was a post that said, men feel too. And the context of it is that Coogan wrote, we understand our cultures within Africa and globally. Mental health is often seen as a taboo topic of conversation. Men's mental health totally blocked out. But here's the truth. Help is more accessible than you think. From the time we are kids, we hear, be a man. Don't cry. You have to be strong. But what happens when the weight becomes too much? Men are not emotionless machines. We feel stress, pressure, and anxiety, but we've conditioned to suppress it. Quoting the Diary of the CEO by Stephen Bartlett, emotions suppressed don't disappear. They manifest in unexpected ways. This isn't about weakness. It's about acknowledging that real strength comes from being human. And then Dylan Price responded and said, this resonates with me so much, especially with family. You're expected to be a man and to man up. The unintended consequence is that you become emotionless with your partner and children, and then it spills over into the engagement with colleagues. Conversations start feeling like transactions. Then one day it all bubbles over and you have a breakdown. It's important to talk to someone who doesn't have an agenda to get how you feel out and to help you navigate sharing your feelings in a non-toxic way. It's okay not to be okay, and it's okay to share what's going on with you, with your spouse, your boss, and your parents. Perfectionism is real and can be debilitating. So Coogan, let's start with you.
Thank you for that. I think thank you for reading out that post. And It feels like a long time ago that I wrote that post up, but it was just the beginning of April. I think from my side, it was me bringing out the subject of men feel too around men's mental health. And I think it's something that we, as a community and as South Africans and globally, that it's not spoken about that much in terms of in public spaces. And the reason why I started writing this post is, and this kind of series on LinkedIn, is because growing up where I grew up in Durban, the word mental health was not even in the vocabulary of people's mouth. It was never spoken. It was never even thought about. Going to men's mental health, not even a topic. Not even something that you usher out. It's was something that you were told from a child and conditioned to be a man. Don't cry. Be strong. And when you grow up and become teenagers and adults, you are unable to show that emotion. You're unable to voice your emotion and verbalize it. You're unable to feel yourself in terms of, am I sad? Am I feeling anxiety? Is this stress? You don't know how to identify it. And then you don't know how to seek help afterwards because you start acting up as men. You're doing a lot of wrong things. You're abusing different things. You become violent. You become moody. You're not yourself in front of your family or your friends. And it shows us in different ways. And I thought, why not start a conversation and start the conversation on a platform that I know people are there that are professionals and want to be seen as professional, but don't want to be vulnerable, don't want to show that they have feelings. And I thought, let me start this and see how it takes off.
Amazing.
Thank you.
Coogan, and again, thank you for posting that. I agree with you. LinkedIn can come across very transactional as well. And honestly, that was the first time I shared an experience from my side, because the platform was given, and obviously I'd been following Coogan for a good year or two, going through my own journey, transitioning from my previous company into my new company, and it was kind of a life transition for me. I'd never spoken really about, who do you speak to actually? I think that's the thing. Even if I look back now all the years with my mates around the Braais, Coogan is exactly correct. None of those conversations come up around mental health or how you're feeling. It's more just frowned upon. We oaks, we're supposed to be tough. We're supposed to toughen up. You know, the other saying that goes around is that you should only cry in the rain. And this kind of generational view towards masculinity goes from grandparent to parent to father. And then I think what was the breaking point for me, or the turning point for me, was my wife falling pregnant. And we had our own difficult journey in pregnancy, and it was our fifth pregnancy, and we were blessed to have him. But you know, the moment you realize you're becoming a dad, and you realize everything you went through with your father and your father went through with his father, you just think to yourself, sure, who is going to stop that generational dysfunction if it's not me? Mm-hmm. Where does the buck stop? Where does those bad behaviors stop? And maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago, there weren't platforms for men, and this wasn't a discussion topic. And that kind of toxic masculinity would just get passed down. And as boys, you get pushed around and punched around and kicked and toughened up, and you know, that's sort of just the norm. And who do you speak to? You know, and I didn't know growing up that I could go speak to my mom. We had our own difficult upbringing in our home, and there was physical abuse. And as a boy, I should never have seen the things that I had seen. But who do I speak to? And then, you know, this life experience happens now where I become a dad, and I think, let me just reflect on where I am in my career, who I am as a person. Have I maybe lost my way? How would I want to raise my son? And then, you know, breaking down and having a conversation with my wife where there's even issues in our marriage that we weren't aware of, and communicating was just very surface level. And what was the wonderful thing was that when I actually managed to just break through that own barrier within myself and actually speak to my partner, she was so relieved that I'm speaking to her, because, you know, the view is that I want to hear your vulnerability, you know. And I was so shocked. I was so surprised. I thought, that's not a thing. Who wants to hear a man that's vulnerable? We've never had it in our bra conversations. We've never had it as a family. It's always the men being the old way of being a man. And that kind of just, it made me very emotional, and my wife quite emotional, that we can now have these deeper conversations. And then it just makes you go and reflect back as a boy, as a teenager, what you went through. I mean, puberty, and you know what you go through as a man when that change happens with you in your body, and then you become an adult and you all of a sudden have finances and expenses, and you know, oh, it's just it's a lot. We live in a day and age where there's so much information we have to digest, and judging is such a big thing on social media. So in my case, I sought out with a therapist, and the reason why I say talk to someone where there isn't an agenda is that unfortunately the people that I did share with, who were colleagues, who I thought were friends, used that information against me or used it to further their own gains, which was heartbreaking, you know. And you start to see some people for who they really are, but then at the same time you see the true quality people in your life, those that take it on and say, wow, Dylan, Coogan, David, wow, Carmen, what you've shared is just incredible, and thank you that you don't have to be this knight in shining armor. That's what shocked me. My wife said to me, that was never the expectation, and I'm sorry that you felt that way. And that was a learning curve for us now, as high as partners, can we talk to each other to dispel these myths and these expectations? And then at the same time, seeking help from someone that doesn't have anything to gain from the information that you share and can just help guide you, just show you the path, because I'm sure each one of us all have got that little child in us that is a good child, that is got no tarnish from the world that makes us the way that we are, and we can find that as men, that fun, that freedom, that excitement that we were when we were children, and let that be where we are now in our lives. So yeah, sorry, I can go on a long time. I'm quite passionate about this, and I haven't really had an opportunity to talk about it. So yeah, let's see where the conversation goes. But it's really something that we need to talk about. And as men, it's almost like this weight just leaves you, that people do actually want to hear, people do care, and your spouses and your ladies in your life, whether it's your wife or your granny or your mom. I mean, to be honest, I shared it with my wife's mom, and she's like, wow, I just wanted that also from my husband.
Yeah.
But he was in the war, and people don't speak when they came back from the war. They had PTSD, and that's just what I wanted in our men, in our family, and we've never had that. So this is even creating a discussion with the older generations, which is wonderful. So I'm excited to see where this goes, and thank you for the opportunity and the platform.
Beautiful. You know, just hearing what you're saying is like, it just opened up my mind. You know, the war stories, for example, it is a story that's not openly spoken about, but both my grandfathers committed suicide, and I've never met them, and the one was because of the war. So he one day came home, it was just after the war, and in those days families used to live in these little, in a house, and it was a family per room. And my grandmother was working, my mom and my aunt, they were around with a landlord, and something happened, and he started walking around with a knife, and he was looking for them. He wanted to kill them. And they warned my gran. In those days, we didn't have mobile phones, it was landlines. And to let my gran know not to come home, and they'll take care of the kids. And he hanged himself when he couldn't find them behind the door a few hours later. My other grandfather walked out of the house and never saw him again. There was missing reports looking for him when I was 3 months old, and they never managed to find him. And I must tell you, as a woman, not having that relationship with my grandfathers and not having that relationship and knowing that they've had these serious mental health issues keeps me up at night sometimes. So I want to direct the conversation now towards David. You know, based on everything that you've heard now, Could you perhaps just, you know, what is your perspective and how do you see it through the work that you do? Because you also do a lot of retreats with men, etc. Could you go into detail in how you are observing the conversation so far?
Yeah, I'd love to. You know, I think the first thing we have to acknowledge is that this isn't, no error has been made. It's not a bug. It's a feature, this midlife passage. And it happens differently for men and for women. But for men, I'll tell you mine, 2012, I was watching Usain Bolt cross the finish line at the London Olympics. Beautiful wife, great job, great health. And I remember thinking the stadium erupted and I just thought, I don't feel much of anything other than I want another drink. And I don't want to do this for another 50 years. And so my whole journey has been about rekindling my feeling function. And I think really what we're talking about is, you know, Coogan mentions that we feel stress, we feel pressure, we feel frustration. But the people I work with, they don't feel a whole lot of anything else. And so the question becomes, how can we learn to A, relax in a world that, as Dylan said, is always on? And then question B, how can we learn to actually enjoy the experience of life instead of treating it as some serious duty all the time that we're supposed to endure and that we've got to provide for and we just got to get through to the end? And really, it's that reframe that makes all the difference. And my experience is there's the pull towards the promise of a better life, but really it's the pain of suffering that is the evolutionary prompt that makes men decide, I don't want to do this anymore. And, you know, the people I coach, the people I work with, it's almost guaranteed success if you feel like that. You know, if you've had enough of doing it the old way, you can do it a new way. But that's the vulnerability required to crack your shell and allow different ways of being to come in.
Beautiful. I think based on everything that we've discussed, I think I want to go back a little bit. As a little boy, you know, how did you experience connecting to your emotions? What is your relationship with your emotions right now? And what is the things that you feel you still need help with in terms of expressing your emotions? Coogan, let's start with you.
Thank you for that. I think as a boy growing up, emotions wasn't something we spoke about. It wasn't something that you felt. Now as an adult, you know, and from research and from going to professionals, that you got to feel these emotions, you got to feel, you got to go through them, right? You got to suppress them. Growing up, where I grew up, it was never something you spoke about and not something you want to understand because it's not something that was entertained as a conversation. It was, you fell down, you scratched your knee, you got up and you ran. You never thought about it because you were not allowed to feel. When you were at school and somebody said something to you that was nasty, you were not allowed to go and tell you, that hurt me, you know, it made me feel bad. We're just told to take it on the chin and carry on. Growing up, becoming a teenager and an adult, you go through this different phases where you try to figure out, am I feeling something that is not normal? Am I feeling something when something's happening that's not regular? Do I need help? And as you do go through different conversations and you hear things, you hear that this is how you're supposed to be feeling when you go through different situations, how to handle it. Becoming an adult and going through various situations and seeing professionals, I have learned that these situations and this trauma and this kind of things that you go through as a man and as a boy and as a teenager is something that you're supposed to learn, feel, and talk about. To learn more, to understand what you're feeling, understand why you're feeling it, and understand how to deal with it, how to communicate. I think for men, generally at the moment, that I feel that they feel it hard to know how to verbalize their feelings. They don't know how to verbalize it. They don't know how to show it. And it sometimes comes out the wrong way. It comes out from like ways of just giving their family money or just taking them where they want or giving them whatever they want as wants and needs and not actually saying, I love you or I really appreciate you. They don't know how to verbalize. And I think that's some of the things that I've learned over time, that find ways to understand how you feel and how to verbalize it, which will make life much easier for you to offload, get a better understanding. As Dylan said, speak to your partner, speak to your family, make them understand, I'm feeling this, but I don't know exactly how to verbalize it, this is a feeling in my body. This is how my body feels when somebody says this to me. And I'm not too sure whether you felt it as well. And that's the kind of things that I've gone through and tried to go through different stages of my life.
I love that you're saying to feel it in your body, that emotional awareness of how the feelings and the emotions are actually showing up in your body. I once went to go and see a kinesiologist where all of the emotion sits in your muscles, and I was blown away to see how trauma and all kinds of events in your life from when you were little actually sit in your muscles, and that your body holds score or holds the score for your life. So Dylan, what is your take on that?
Sure. So much to say. I think, Coogan, you hit the nail on the head. It's a feeling, and the problem that I realized is because you've suppressed it for so long, it comes out in strange ways because you don't know how to put words to that feeling, you know. And I mean, when I dealt with it, it was a very interesting case. Is that and you speak about the little boy, and I had this what the therapist called Mr. Defensive, and what Mr. Defensive really was me now, when I'm faced with a situation that reminds me of my childhood trauma, I immediately put up a guard and become defensive and withdrawn. And what it really is there's that little boy inside of me who saw things that he shouldn't have seen, and saw trauma, saw abuse, and should not have seen that. He should have seen fun and excitement and should have been happy and shouldn't have been exposed to those things at a young age, where the adult in me now is still trying to protect that little boy instead of embracing that full journey through childhood, through adolescence, through being an adult. And what is helping me now in my later years is understanding in certain situations where a boss raises their voice or colleagues are fighting, that same raising of a voice, because I experienced it in my home of that loudness and that violence, I'm trying to separate it from the moment that it's not the same situation. It's okay that when I was a little boy, I experienced that and that was isolated. It's not the same experience I'm going through now. So to untangle those neuro connections from what happened in childhood to now has been a challenge. It's been difficult, and it's being able to talk about it with people and to actually realize, and I think that's where Coogan says you get that feeling, but your body's just reminding you of that score when you were 12 years old that somebody shouted at you or hit you with a belt, and someone's shouting at you now and you're feeling that same pain. And to be able to separate that's very difficult, and actually to talk about it. And then you don't talk about it or share it with your partner or whoever your confidant is, and then that builds and it builds, and you start having mental breakdowns or anxiety, panic attacks, and then one small event in the grander all the events is what triggers you. And then people have a breakdown, or they go as far as to wanting to commit suicide is because you don't know how to deal with those feelings, those emotions. Carmen, you make an excellent point about army veterans. I had my oppas that were still around, and my dads, and what they went through was no 18-year-old should ever go into a world war and fight and have to kill other people and come back and just automatically fit into society. And that same 18-year-old boy raised my dad, and then my dad had to raise me. And through that whole journey, nobody could speak to each other. I'm sure if we could go back, we would shout and say, "Dad, just talk to me about what it was you were going through." You know, that's what I feel like in my spirit now is to go back and start speaking to other men and say, like Coogan mentioned something, that I can see it on that person. I can see it on my colleague walking past, that you're walking with some pain. And you're masking, and I don't think we should mask anymore. But again, like what David was saying, is how do we find the right coaches, the right mentors, people that can help us in this kind of midlife journey, that can help us go back and look at what we went through in our childhood. And I mean, I don't know how it was for Coogan and David, but in my childhood, we had this transition into technology. Mobile phones started coming through. You had access to things you should never have seen as a 12-year-old. Substance abuse like alcohol started to come through in teenagers because that was the fun thing to do, as opposed to really speaking about what you were going through with what your parents were doing in the house, what you were feeling as going through puberty, seeing abuse, seeing divorce, seeing alcohol abuse from your parents. We didn't know what to talk about as teenagers, so what did we do? We would go out and party, we would go out and get up to mischief, and those things maybe follow you in your life. And it's only, like I said, when you realize that you're now a dad and you think, oops, I really don't want my boy to grow up experiencing what I experienced. And how do I then go about addressing this? Because there's no manual. Kugan, you mentioned that there's no... We never had these discussions as family. It wasn't the topic of conversation at Sunday lunches. It really wasn't. So now it's like, now that we're introducing it, what's a healthy way to introduce? Because one thing I'm also mindful of is my dad didn't have maybe the tools that I had, and his dad as well. So they did their best that they could as dads. Maybe it wasn't great, and maybe we've got hurt and stuff that we can talk to them. But I'd hate to put that on a 60-year-old or 65-year-old that you failed as a dad, and just perpetuate what he's feeling, because maybe he knows he couldn't do, he did the best that he could, but he still feels like a failure. But he's never had that conversation with me to say, yes, boy, I tried, but I know I didn't do great. So I'm also conscious of that as a male, to not put my suffering onto someone else, but rather hear them out as well. And then that creates a new kind of conversation. So, yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. And, yeah, it just starts with sharing our feelings, and sometimes it'll come out in the beginning, it comes out it like all comes out strange, but if you're in a safe space and that person that you're talking to loves you and doesn't have an agenda, it'll grow and you'll be able to learn how to verbalize your feelings and your emotions better over time.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing your story, and I just want to acknowledge also, you know, and thank you for being so vulnerable and sharing how, you know, you were raised in a home with gender-based violence, because that's often something. The other day had a discussion with First for Women on the state of gender-based violence and the state of the world right now. And we need to create these spaces for men to start healing so that we can minimize it, because with the far right movements happening in the world, that's only going to increase gender-based violence, because we're layering upon the same thing over and over. It's really becoming concerning. You know, sociologist Ray Oldenburg taught about the first space, our home life, and the second space is our work life. But he also describes something just as essential, which is the third space. These third spaces are the anchors of community life, informal public places where people gather voluntarily, feel a sense of belonging, and engage in meaningful conversations like these, without agenda or performance. But places like barbershops, sports fields, libraries, coffee houses, faith gatherings, these spaces are just the places where you allowed to be. But the interesting research is showing that there has been a massive decline for the past 30 years in the third spaces, and even more so after the pandemic. And we really need to start looking also at the digital migration that has happened. It was once seen as the solution to bring people together in communities, online spaces. But it often, earlier to the point on LinkedIn, it fosters this whole performance, you know, title, who am I type of environment, and showing off, you know, the external rather than the internal disruption of who you are and showing up authentically. And it's also become a lot around conflict and the algorithms finding you through conflicts and surveillance. That's not true human connection. And I want to pose this question to David. How do we create more third spaces? How do we create more environments where these deep conversations can happen around raising our boys, around connecting with ourselves, our emotions and our feelings?
Yeah, sure, I'd love to. So Robert Johnson, he's a midlife psychologist, and he's actually Carl Jung's youngest student. And he said all men are either 16 or 46. And I believe that to be true because we have these adolescent heads, and you mentioned at the beginning rites of passage and initiations and vision quests, and we don't do any of that anymore. So what we do is we run around with an ego that wants to fulfill Maslow's hierarchy of needs, which ends in self-esteem. And we want to be successful because that's the American Western dream. And then many people don't get successful, so they tap out there. But the ones that I work with and the ones in this room and perhaps some of the people listening to this, they've achieved some level of success. And then, you know, Jim Carrey said, I wish everyone could be famous and successful because then you'd see it's not the answer. And so once we see it's not the answer, the question is, what do we do about it? And the first thing to note is the old tribe that you had when you were 16 going on 33, whatever it is, those people might not be for you anymore. Because friends aren't necessary for lifetimes. Quite often they're for seasons or even moments. I let go of almost every friend I had when I went through my transition. I've got one old brother, oldest friend I have, and we have very different lives. He has maybe grown a little bit less than me, but we're karmically connected, and that's great. But many other people have to go, because when you stop drinking, when you stop doing whatever you're numbing and escaping is, you quickly realize they're not your friends. They're just people you numb and escape with, right? So the first thing is you have to be willing to let go of the life you have for the life that's waiting for you. And then when you join clubs of conscious men, and you can go to Mankind Club, that's an incredible initiative that happens all over South Africa. And they have an initiation weekend where you can go and speak to men in some of the ways Dylan and Coogan have been describing. Mankind, amazing. There are coaches, there are psychologists, there are hiking clubs. You know, if you go out in nature, the kind of men that get out into nature are the kind of men who would be receptive and listen to you talking about these things. What you're not going to do is find somebody who deeply listens to you and cares about you over a few brandy and cokes in a bar, because that's just a kind of different vibration. And ultimately, your vibe determines your tribe. And as you do this inner work, and as you stop chasing pleasure and minimizing pain, and as you look inside yourself, and as you peel back the layers, what you'll find is people will magically appear who you can talk to. The first thing you have to do is just really want it and to start seeking to stop chasing things outside yourself and start learning to sit with yourself, which is highly uncomfortable in a world that is totally bereft of boredom because of all this technology that we have.
Wow. What I would like for us maybe just to go around the room is perhaps give us advice what you would encourage men in how to grow with their pain and how to face this particular time of your life where you feel that the old life is no longer for you. You want to create a new life. You're not feeling settled in. How do you get in touch with your emotions? Because obviously that takes work. And I can just imagine for us as women, we are far more internal. So I mentioned to you all, I'm a numerologist on the side. And, you know, through numerology, my teachers taught me something so beautiful. And she said, always remember, a man's sexual organs is external and a woman's sexual organs is internal. So a woman feels emotions differently than a man does. It's far more internal. So we also need to bear that in mind. So it's harder work for men to get in touch with their emotions. So what I would like us to discuss now is, you know, how can you give the compass or the direction as to how do you find that emotions and deal with them more intimately? Coogan.
Cool. Thanks for that comment. I thank you for sharing your stories and the kind of studies and the things you've learned. And as well as David, I think it's very, very meaningful to me as well. I think for me, when men need to allow themselves to feel, they need to allow themselves to know and sit by themselves, as you said, Carmen, which is very hard, and really, really dig in deep and say, am I feeling this because I am told or conditioned as a child growing up and by society to be like this? Or do I really feel this, like this way? Do I really want to be like this? Do I want to be a person that's always hard? A person that has no sense of, you know, feeling for the next person, you know, not knowing how to express themselves. And I think honing, own that feeling, own that anger, own that emotion, own that hatred, or own that hurt, and really understand where it's coming from. Once you know where that's coming from, and you actually freeze that place in time where that hurt or emotion or that betrayal came from, and you really understand it was them. It did happen. I did go through it. It made me feel bad. Understand it. There's only one way to go through, to understand and heal from pain, is for going through it. And I've learned that from professionals, that you have to go through that pain. You've got to feel it in your body. You've got to feel that exact moment that tore you down or put you apart. And then understand you are more than that. You are better than that. And that there is people out there like us on this call, like people, professionals, like spiritual leaders, like people at your confidants, your partners, that you can go and tell them. You can break down. You can be emotional. Let it out. As men, we find it very hard to be emotional. What I mean emotional is mean actually crying, tears, you know, crying out and speaking out and letting all that out with your partner or that person that you can be strong with. And understand that once you start speaking it out into the universe, it becomes less heavy on you. You then know another person knows what you went through, and you can start understanding where you need that healing from. And that point there makes you understand that you are stronger. You're not weaker by being vulnerable. You're not weaker by telling people how you feel. And that's a misconception that we all have been taught, that if you speak about vulnerability, speak about things that are hurting you emotionally and mentally, you become weak as a man. It doesn't. It makes you stronger. It makes you somebody that can help the next person to go through it as well. I think that's the first steps that I would advise anybody to go through.
Absolutely. Kugan, love what you shared there. I think a sad story, but a good story, is when I went on this journey, it was exactly what you said. I had this misconception that you're going to take a pill, or, you know, you're going to see the psychologist, you're going to take a pill, and it's all going to go away. And immediately that was addressed by, no, we're going to find the crack, we're going to see the cracks, and we're going to embrace them, because that's what makes you uniquely you. And we're going to acknowledge that there was that pain, that suffering, like you said, Kugan, own that anger, own that emotion, embrace it, verbalize it, get it out there, get it out your head, just say what's in there, and that it's okay not to be okay. As young boys growing up, you kick your toe, you fall off the bike, you get told, you're okay, get up, you'll be fine, dust yourself off, you're okay. You never get asked, are you in pain? Something as simple like that, oh, I see that you fell off your bike, is your knee sore? You know, it's just strange ways of talking, because it's strange to me because it was never spoken like that, but it gives you an opportunity to actually verbalize how you're feeling, what does it mean? And why I say it's a sad story is because the person that helped me through my journey and allowed me to find the cracks, to build myself up, to acknowledge why I react in certain ways and why I've had certain substance abuses and how I can overcome them, because that's another big thing, is to say no to the alcohol. If it's a problem in your life and you're using that, as David said, to numb you, which I was doing, I was using the brandy and coke to numb me, to not deal with that, because it's difficult to actually share. It's easier just to numb it and talk about general things. There are things that you're going to have to give up to help yourself become in tune with yourself and to be healthy. I always said to my wife that I want to be a dad that when I'm in my 50s, I'm fit and healthy enough to still play with my boy and not be on the couch with heart problems or issues, or, you know, I want to be a dad that's present. But unfortunately, the psychologist that helped me through this, he committed suicide 2-3 years ago. And when I heard that happened, I just thought, wow, you've helped me. But unfortunately, maybe someone wasn't there to help him. And I feel like that was such a loss, that I was able to acknowledge and get through a journey that I needed. And I lost someone really important to me. But at the same time, it gives me this energy to go out and help others and to see others and and to really just share that it just starts, like Coogan said, it just starts with just getting it out there. How do you feel? And to know that it's okay to feel that way. It doesn't make you any less of a person, any less of a man. If anything, it makes you amazing that you have been able to dig deep and share something vulnerable within yourself. And just know that then the people that really matter will start showing themselves and will help you through that journey. And it might be the most unexpected people in your life. For me, I thought I could never share something like that with my wife because she might feel less of me, or she might feel like I'm letting the team down. But this was all in my head. It was my own thoughts. And when I shared all of this that was going on in my life, she broke down in tears. I broke down in tears. It was a real deep, vulnerable moment. And since then, I've been able to check in on a deeper level with her that I've never been able to before. But I had to undo those neurological pathways of what I thought it was like to be a man, what it means to feel, what it means to share. And if, like what David's mentioning with the mankind groups, how epic would that be to be able to connect with more conscious men and have these conversations and then invite other men that maybe don't know into these groups? Because really there's so much good it can do. I mean, I'm speaking like this because I feel that weight that's off because I'm being able to share even right now in this forum, as opposed to keeping it in. It feels wonderful that, Carmen, we can talk to you about this as a lady, because I know what it means to speak to my wife about it, and that we're not being looked down on. It's not toxic masculinity.
It's beautiful.
It's a wonderful thing. And yeah, I just want to encourage that we try and have these groups, and we try and get outside of the social media vacuum and just connect in person and try where we can. I mean, this is wonderful to do it virtually, but like David mentioned, going on a hike and being in the fresh open air and being able to share is just a wonderful thing. So yeah, it just starts with just verbalizing, being vulnerable and knowing that it's okay. It doesn't make you any less of a person to share, even if it's ugly feelings, if it's ugly emotions, if it's anger. Just get it out there and you'll deal with it with your special person or your other person that's going to help you through this journey. And yeah, it's a wonderful journey to start, and it's never too late to start. Never, ever.
Yeah, you know, I just summarized by saying you get one life, and the biggest regret you're ever going to have is not going all in. And going all in means going inward, and there's this middle passage that happens typically between the age of 30 and 50, and, you know, certainly we get intimations of it in our 30s, and normally we leave it till our 40s until we do anything about it, but you've got to go all in on yourself. And as Coogan said, you have to feel your emotions, and that means putting your phone down, and that means sitting still, aka meditation, and actually just allowing the pain to process, because what you're feeling is healing you. And that already very few people are willing to do. But if you don't do it, you're going to end up, like Dylan's been talking about, perpetuating your intergenerational lineage. So the work is really, you sit still, you feel it, you heal it, you get into nature, and you do whatever it takes, you know, plant medicine, Reiki, psychotherapy, coaching, whatever it takes to get through the mountain of anger and the lake of tears that sit inside pretty much all men who don't do this work. And then, as Dylan said, you become an elder. You stop being 16 and you become 46. Then you're a useful person, because then you have clarity, then you have presence, then you have peace. And that is what not only people want most, but it's also what careers reward most. So this isn't just a way of helping those around you, it's also a way of helping yourself, becoming who you could be, fulfilling your potential, and ultimately living out your genuine destiny.
Wow. And you know, listening to all of you guys sharing your vulnerability with me today, I'm just absolutely blown away by it. But I also think it's so important for us as women to hold space for our men and to be able to allow for those moments for, as you say, the lake of tears that sits within our men, to allow for that to stream out so that the joy can also find itself. You know, I think we're all in this time that we are living and striving for peace. And in order to achieve peace, we also need to know that happiness comes with sadness. All of these emotions have duality within them. So it's important to embrace all of the emotions, become more literate in understanding our emotions, and we can learn so much from each other. And I've learned definitely so much from you today, and I really want to encourage our conscious leaders, also just to really recognize how we also can show up and hold space for our men in this time that we're in. One thing that I wanted to mention that's interesting also through my teacher is our life works in cycles. So if you don't learn the lesson in the cycle, that cycle repeats. And when that cycle repeats, it becomes louder and louder and louder. And it's the same storyline, different characters. So they do show up all the time. And it's so, the sooner you learn the lesson, the sooner you prepare to do the inner disruption, you can disrupt the world outside of your life. But if you're not prepared to do the inner disruption, you're not going to be able to disrupt it in the way that you wish to do. And that is why learning the lesson, and the lesson is really to know that everything sits within inside of you. You have all the wisdom, and it's just a matter of dealing with all that pain and trauma and really just opening yourself up. I know we've run out of time, so I just want to go around the room. One word of encouragement to our audiences, what you would like to see in the future. Coogan?
I think lastly, I'd like to close off by saying that when I had my awakening at 40, and I call it my awakening, it allowed me to understand things much differently. And I want to leave you with this, is that we don't create our meaning for life. We discover it on the way. Thank you.
Thank you, Coogan. That's amazing. From my side, I think just briefly, love yourself. Self-love. I mean, it's a embrace who you are as a man. It's okay not to be okay. And as Coogan, his journey started at 40, his awakening. Mine was at 30. It doesn't have to be at a certain date, but just enjoy life and love yourself and just take the pressure off. And you're not alone. I think, let me put that out there, you're not alone.
Yeah, and once you start, this thing happens very gradually and then suddenly. And suddenly you have all these great big mega amazing epiphanies and feelings and awakenings, and you start living in peace, joy, compassion, equanimity, all those things that you doubt the existence of, they happen, but you just need to take a single step. You have the endurance because you're a male warrior, and now you need to become an inward warrior as well as an outward one.
Love it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for today. This is obviously not the end. I think that these topics need to be expanded on, but I just want to say thank you so much. And Coogan, thank you.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.